Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I am here with Laura Schiller. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
Laura is, she describes herself as a hot mess wife and mother of three who all of a sudden found herself in a mental hospital. She learned so many lessons and is now publishing a book all about her journey called Finding Flossom.
Correct.
So welcome, Laura. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here, and I so appreciate you taking the time to have me on here.
Cool. So let's start at the beginning, I guess. You trained as an attorney, right?
Correct. I was an attorney. I was a very successful attorney. I was attorney for 17 years. I was in the trust and estates field, and I did not like one bit of those 17 years.
So it was like you were a partner, right?
Or yes, I was.
You explained to me something. You're some kind of partner.
Yes. So I was a shareholder at a big law firm in New Jersey. I started as an associate in a big law firm, and then I moved and worked for my dad for many years after working at a mid-sized firm. And then, unfortunately, my dad passed away. I inherited his business, and I got hired as a shareholder at a very great law firm in New Jersey, and they are fabulous. And I can't say one bad thing about them because they were absolutely fabulous to me. I just realized that I never liked being an attorney for the 17 years. And the best part about it was working with my dad. And now that my dad unfortunately passed away, I realized that there was really not much left for me that I appreciated in the law anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it was stress that led you to your big change?
It was definitely stress. My whole life, I wanted to be an attorney. So I just trained to be an attorney. I didn't think in my head, am I happy with this at all? For 13 years, I was just a machine. Big law firm, mid-sized firm, then smaller firm. A lot of people follow that path as an attorney.
And your dad was an attorney too. So it was like a family kind of expectation, do you think?
Expectation. My dad was the greatest guy. I don't think he would have been like, you have to do this. But I think he loved working. I know he loved working with me, and I felt as though I should do it. And I was doing it, and it was great. And then I thought it was great. And then I ended up in a mental hospital, and there they analyzed whether you actually like your job or not. And I had about 6 hours of therapy a day. So we had plenty of time to talk about what was my passion and whether law was actually my passion. And I realized that law was not my passion at all. And I realized that it was causing a lot of stress in my life, and that it may have been the reason, among other things. I have a mental disability, but health disability. But I, among other things, one of the reasons why I was in the mental hospital was because it was so much stress. And I realized that.
Right. Right.
It was also because I'm bipolar. So I had a manic episode. And I ended up in a mental hospital. But to get to mania, even if you're bipolar, the doctors say there usually is stress involved in it. So they were trying to figure out what stress was involved that made me manic in order to not ever make me manic again.
So what was like the event? Because you said you ended up in a mental hospital, and you say I had a bipolar like event. Like, what was the event?
Yeah, so I was manic. I had no idea. I didn't sleep or eat for a week. I reached out to every single person I know and told them that I'm obsessed with them and I want to write a book about them. I fought with my husband, which we don't usually fight. I fought with friends. I never fight with friends. It was just not myself. I was totally outside my body. I had psychosis. So I said things and did things that are so abnormal and so not like me. And I had no idea what was going on. In my head, when you're manic and you're bipolar, it's actually the best feeling you could feel is when you feel manic. So many bipolar people who have bipolar actually don't take their medicine because they feel so good with mania. They don't want to take their medicine and miss mania. But I did enough self-damaging things while manic that I never want to be manic again. And I obviously never want to be taken away from my family again to go to a mental hospital. So I do everything every single day that I can in my power to make sure that I am as stress-free as I can be for the day.
Right. Right. So did your husband just kind of get to a point and be like, I know this isn't you, or like, you know what I mean?
Hospital?
Huh?
Yes. So he had to call. He had to basically force me to go to the hospital, which was one of the scariest decisions for him. But he was scared about my safety. Once you get so manic, you can be a threat to yourself or others. I wasn't threatening anyone or myself. Just it was that I was so far gone that they were nervous. So they put me on suicide watch at the psych ward. My husband was just nervous because he had no idea what was going on. So he had to make a call. Fortunately, my sister's a social worker and three of my good friends are in the mental health field. So they were helping my husband and they all decided to get the state came and they evaluated me and realized that I was a danger and I needed to go to the psych ward. So they told me that and I had to actually sign. I could have gone involuntarily, which would have been a lot worse. Or they told me if I went voluntarily, it would be a lot better. It was still pretty bad in the psych ward.
So you signed, right?
I signed and went, yes.
And do you remember that incident?
I remember. And what did
you think when they were, you know, what did you think?
I know what I thought. I thought my husband was playing an April Fool's joke on me because it was March 31st. And that's what I thought was happening. Well, I signed thinking it was a joke. And I woke up April 1st. And I still thought it might be a joke. But I wasn't 100% sure what I was doing. I had no idea.
That'd be a hell of a joke.
Oh, we do jokes like that. I mean, we do huge. I mean, this would have been an extreme joke, but we do pretty big jokes on each other and we love making jokes on each other. So the fact that I would have belonged in a hospital, I wouldn't have put that past him.
Really? So you have three kids. Like, what was the experience of your kids during this?
That was the hardest part. That is the hardest part for this whole thing, right? Like my husband and I had to adjust, obviously, coming back and he's the best. So he just showed unconditional love, as did my kids. But when it first happened, this was 4.5 years ago. So my kids now are 13, 12 and 12, but they were under 10. And I didn't think that they'd really understand that mommy was in a mental hospital. So we didn't know what to do. And my husband didn't know what to do. It was more. He was in charge because I was just in La La Land. And he just told them that I was on a work trip. So they didn't know for a few years. And then we have since told them everything. So they know that I'm bipolar. They know that I was in a mental hospital. They know that I was away for 5 weeks. They know that it was necessary and that it really helped me. And they know that I do everything in my power to stay stable for them.
So they didn't really notice when you were having your week-long manic episode, right?
No, they thought it was the best thing because I let them stay up 24/7. I told them there's no bedtime in my manic.
Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I am here with Laura Schiller. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm so glad to have you today. Laura describes herself as a hot mess wife and mom of three who all of a sudden found herself in a mental hospital. She learned a lot of lessons along the way and is now publishing a book called Finding Flossom. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate it.
So let's start from the beginning and talk a little bit about kind of your professional journey. Where did you start out from before you ended up where you are now?
I was an attorney for 17 years, started at a big law firm, and then I was at a mid-sized firm, and then I worked for my dad for 10 years, and then I was offered a shareholder position at a great law firm in New Jersey. And I did that for 6 months. And I realized that a few years before that, I realized that I absolutely do not enjoy the law. And so I walked away from what most people dream of having.
So you took the position after you already realized that, like, law is not for me?
Correct. That is 100% correct. My dad, when he was dying, made it clear that he wanted me to take over his practice, or at least try. So I promised him that I would try for 6 months. And I did try for 6 months. And my husband, who's a lawyer, thought that I would like the aspect of being a partner because I love being an entrepreneur. And he's a partner and owns his law firm. And he absolutely thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread. My dad thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. So I was sitting there wondering what I was missing. And I thought maybe the shareholder position was exactly what I was looking for, and that it would make me happy in the law. And if anything, it just made me more unhappy because you have a lot of responsibilities as a shareholder.
Right, right. So what kind of law did you practice?
I did trust and estates. So I helped people write their wills.
Okay.
And it was when it was given to me, I remember they said it's a good field to go into because it deals with death and taxes, which are the two things that are unavoidable in your life. So that is true. And I was told to go into it because it's a very personable field, which it is. You get to know your clients pretty well. But there are certain stresses about being a lawyer that I just couldn't handle with my mental health abilities.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Yeah, because I was thinking if you were a litigator or something, that's like super duper stress, right? But you were.
Yeah, no, it was not super duper stress. No, yeah. Litigation is a lot more stressful. Mergers and acquisitions is a lot more stressful. My husband does real estate, which I think is a great field as well. And trust and estates is a great field if you can handle it. But unfortunately, it was just a little too much for me.
Right. So did your dad, you worked with your dad and then you moved on to this law firm? Was it after he passed?
Correct.
Okay. So that was kind of like your promise to him, I'm going to try for 6 months.
Exactly.
And then it didn't work.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about like when you were like, this isn't working.
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, there's two parts of it. First, I realized 4.5 years ago when I was in a mental hospital that law wasn't working for me, which I could go into, but I could tell my backstory. But in the back of my mind, I kept telling my family that law was not for me. And I was so similar to my dad. I think to this day, they still have a hard time believing that I did not like the law. Like they cannot understand how someone, since I was so similar to my dad and he loved it so much, I think it's hard for my family to realize that I just did not enjoy it. But I did a lot of deep searching in a mental hospital, as you could imagine. You get to delve into anything you want to talk about. You have about 6 to 7 hours of therapy a day in a mental hospital. So they dive into every single thing you want to discuss for as long as you want to discuss. They wanted to make sure that the rest of my life will be stress-free. So I took really good notes and I listened well and I followed what they said and I took advantage of as much therapy as I could take because that's what I was there for.
So do you think, so you said you worked with your dad for 14 years, right?
10 years, yep.
10 years. Do you think that maybe just because of the fact you were working with your dad and he understood you and you were in like a more maybe supportive atmosphere than a new firm, that kind of eased, you know, made it less stressful for you enough that you could handle it?
That's exactly what happened. Well, I am bipolar. I have ADHD. Bipolar doesn't. Obviously there's every day I need to make sure that I'm stable, but I've been stable for 4.5 years. So that's fabulous. So I worry about bipolar because I have a mood disorder, but my ADHD is very hard to be a lawyer with. So my dad was very accommodating. He knew this. He knew all about it. Also, I mean, it's not a surprise to everyone, but I had 3 kids within 20 months. So having 3 kids within 20 months and being a lawyer can be a little difficult too. So exactly. So, I am so lucky. I will say this to the day I die. I'm so fortunate I got to work with my dad. He was amazing. He did give me accommodations that made it easier. And I wasn't necessarily going to quit on my dad while he was alive because I felt as though it was a pretty sweet deal I had. I didn't like the law, but I was able to work when I wanted to, and not everyone loves their job and can, you know, many just go to their job and do their job and that's what they do. But I realized that once I got to the new law firm and I was no longer working with my dad, I realized I only have one life to live. And although I was making the best salary I've ever made in my life, for sure, I realized that I needed to step away for the happiness in my life and for my kids and for myself.
Yeah. So I know that probably most people know what ADHD is. Not everybody knows what bipolar is.
That's
so
correct.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about those two things and how they are they different when they're together than if they're just
a little different. I mean, a lot of things, sometimes I do things that aren't what I would think would be perceived as normal. And I'm like, was that my ADHD or my bipolar? And sometimes I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
But bipolar, for those that don't know, is a mood disorder where you have very, very high highs and very, very low lows. So you try to, what you try to avoid, which is common with bipolar, if you're not medicated, and even sometimes if you are medicated, you go into what's called mania. And when I was in mania, I had psychosis also. So I totally lost my mind. I thought I was on a Kardashian show. As I said, I thought my husband was playing an April Fool's joke on me. And you just lose touch with reality. But mania feels amazing because you feel like you're on top of the world. You're just saying and doing damaging things to the rest of the people around you. Depression is the other aspect of bipolar, which unfortunately many people can relate to in this world. I speak to hundreds of people who are suffering with mental health, and I'd say depression is one of the most common. It's either anxiety or depression, I'd say, are the two that I speak to people the most on. Bipolar is much more rare. But the other part of bipolar is that if you're not manic, and a lot of times after you are manic, you could go into what's called a depression if you're not on medication. And it's similar to everyone else's depression. But I will say this, depression is a very trendy word right now. And a lot of people say they're depressed of all ages, right? I've heard my 12-year-old tweens say they're depressed. They're not depressed. I've heard people my mom's age in their 70s say they're depressed if they, you know, don't like their hair. They're not depressed. But, you know, if you are really depressed, you feel it's hard to get out of bed. It's hard to shower. It's hard. Things that you take for granted, you literally cannot do as a depression. And I thought I was in a depression before I came home from the mental hospital once. But then when I was actually in a depression after the mental hospital, it is like nothing you've ever experienced. So I give a huge hug to anyone who's in a depression. It is a part of bipolar, but many people I know in my life personally and who I speak to on social media, unfortunately, have suffered from depression as well. But that is one side effect of bipolar. So with bipolar, you try to avoid being too high or too low. And fortunately, before the mental hospital, I had a huge manic episode. That's why I got there. Then I had a huge depression after. Unfortunately, for the last 4 years, knock on wood, completely stable. The meds have been helping me and I take them and I have to go to therapy for the rest of my life. But I will take that if I am stable. ADHD, I'm sure many more people know about that. That is when you have trouble paying attention. But I actually have a rare form of ADHD, so I'd love to talk about it. I have inattentive ADHD. So not too many people know about that. So I thought my whole life I was just disorganized and a messy human being, right? Like I was very successful. I did really well in college, did really well in law school, successful lawyer. But I've always been disorganized and I've always been messy. And I always thought that that was because of just that's how I was. I had no idea that there was inattentive ADHD. I knew nothing about this. And then I came home from the mental hospital. I was on the call with my psychiatrist and she's like, you seem like you sometimes lose focus. Do you feel that way? And I was like, I felt that way my whole life. I definitely have ADHD. And they're like, well, why don't you get evaluated? And I was like, that's a good idea. So they did the evaluation. They said I definitely have ADHD. But with the inattentive ADHD, it's a lack of focus to want to clean, to want to do dishes, to want to do laundry. And so getting on meds for that has completely changed my life because although it's still a little messy, it's a lot better than it was. I'm a lot more organized. It's a lot better feeling with these meds. So I was diagnosed with it about 2 years ago. And I was so happy to get that diagnosis. Unlike bipolar, when I found out I was bipolar, I was not happy. ADHD, very happy. And I've seen such a huge difference in my ability to just do life and be organized throughout life. And I still have my hot mess moments. And that's why in my introduction, I said I'm a hot mess mom, because I still miss things. And I, you know, drop my kids off at school, sometimes forget to pick them up once, that happens. But usually I am on top of things better.
I can't say I haven't almost been there.
Yeah, they called me and they're like, were you planning to pick your kids up from school today? They're waiting for you. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I was parent pickup today. I totally forgot, even though I just wrote the note 3 hours ago. But anyway, yeah, so that's inattentive ADHD and they do interact a lot. And some things you don't even, because with ADHD and bipolar, there is a common thing, and I try really hard not to lash out on people, right? Because when you're bipolar, the stigma is that you lash out on people. So I'm trying to break the stigma. Try not to lash out on people. But interestingly enough, if you have ADHD, you lash out on people too. Some of your mood swings could be from ADHD. Some can be from bipolar. So it's always interesting what's going on in my life. I try to stay as positive and calm and stress-free and joyful as I can every day. I think every day that I wake up that I'm stable with bipolar, I feel it's a joyful day. I'm so lucky to live every day. stable. And with my ADHD, I know it affects me daily, but I also know it can be a superpower. So I don't get stressed about the fact that I have either of those now because I accept both of them. But it's definitely sometimes a question in my head, is that because of ADHD or bipolar? So they definitely coincide and interact.
Doesn't
a lot.
ADHD like somehow like enable you to hyper-focus in a way?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you're interested in something, like I was so interested in writing my book. So I wrote 2 chapters a week. It was no problem. And the writing coach was like, I can't believe you actually listened to what I did and said, like the speed. And I was like, yeah, well, I loved it. So of course, if I'm into something, I could hyper-focus on anything.
Which actually makes it like, I think a lot of people think of people as ADHD as people who like have a million things going on at once and never finish anything. And I think that's the other side of the coin, right? Is that you can hyper-focus and get a lot more done just on one specific thing while you let everything else fall into disrepair around you.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly how I would describe it. So when I was writing, I didn't do my laundry, I didn't do the dishes, but I wrote a whole book. So it was good.
Do you know why? Didn't they used to call bipolar manic depressive disorder? And do you know why they changed it?
I think maybe to be a little bit more PC, bipolar manic depressive. I'm not sure. But they did change it. It used to be that. And I think because maybe it's more than just manic and depressive. I don't know. Maybe because they wanted to have more. I'm not really sure why they changed it. But I don't know if it's more politically correct now or not. But usually I feel like that's why they change things. But I'm not sure.
Yeah. Interesting. How long were you in the mental hospital?
So first they took me to a psych
unit.
Yes. First they took me to a psych ward in the hospital right near my house, which was the worst week of my life. People were in the psych ward that were from jail. And they said jail is better than a psych ward. And they said that they were in jail because they assaulted people. And they said they assaulted princesses like me. So I was nervous for my life while I was there. Not that they actually threatened me, but I didn't know if that was a threat. So I was scared. This one guy kept wiping his feet on the fridge. Like, you have no idea what I saw. But anyway, that was pretty bad. I had no idea what was going on. They kept giving me needles, and I hate needles, and it was just really bad. I had no idea. I was out of my mind completely the first week, and it was horrible. I tried to run away, and the teen officers put me down and gave me a tranquilizer gun. Like, it was really bad. Then I was fortunate enough that my sister and my friends found this amazing mental hospital. I was there for 4 weeks. It was kind of like a fancy one, and I was in the fancy house. So they allowed me to, it was 6 to 7 hours of therapy. So it was a mental hospital, but they had massages, they had yoga, they had meditation every day. And then in the house that I was in, I was fortunate enough to be in a house where I got my phone for a few hours. So most people in a mental hospital do not get their phone for 4 weeks. And I'm sure many people could think how that would be for not having your phone for 4 weeks.
It sounds like the first atmosphere, like, seriously, would make you so much more stressed and more, you know, for lack of a better word, more crazy.
Exactly. It did. And I had no idea what I was doing there. And I couldn't even talk about it until, if you had me on this podcast 6 months ago, I probably couldn't even talk about it because I had such PTSD from it. I got over the PTSD with some lessons, but it took me a while to get over that because it was so traumatic to see.
Yeah.
But then I got to the next place, and maybe if I went there straight, I wouldn't have loved it as much as I did. But because I felt like I was stripped of everything, you know, I had no rights in the psych ward. I felt like I was at the Ritz-Carlton when I was at a mental hospital. And it wasn't that nice. I know I'm describing it as nice. It was very nice for a mental hospital, but it was definitely no Ritz-Carlton.
It's all relative.
It felt like the Ritz-Carlton to me because I just came from a place where I was wearing a hospital gown and I was scared for my life.
Yeah. So what led up to you being committed? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, I know you were stressed, but you don't just say, oh, I'm stressed, I'm going to go into a mental hospital.
No, I was totally out of my mind. Didn't sleep for a week. I didn't eat for a week. And I thought that was normal. When you're manic, you don't think you're manic at all. You think you feel like you're in the best feeling ever. I thought I was on top of the world. You almost feel like you've been trying to figure out something for your life and you finally figured out when you're manic. I don't know what I was figuring out, but that's what it felt like. And I kept telling my husband, I finally figured out life. But I was in a whole nother planet while I was figuring out life. So I was not eating, not sleeping, speaking very quickly, which is a sign of mania. And I was telling every person that I ever met that I was obsessed with them and writing a book about them. So that is not normal behavior for me. I'm usually pretty shy, not shy, but I would never reach out to people I don't know, barely know and say that. So one of them who I barely knew, someone who I barely knew, actually was nervous when I was messaging her and like called the cops just to make sure I was okay. And then my husband got a note and he was worried. So he was like, it was a whole big thing, but I was definitely out of my mind. So I needed to be. And they came to my house and they made me voluntarily go to the hospital. And they had to convince me that it would be worse if it was involuntary. And I just thought it was an April Fool's joke. So I gladly signed and went, and it was no April Fool's joke.
You thought it was a joke, and your husband had like hired these people to come in with a paper to make you sign it and all the, wow.
It was March 31st, so I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, that's such an interesting like break in reality where you like, you know, like if that's the kind of pranks that you guys sometimes play on each other, it would be totally normal for you to be like, okay, I'm going to go along with this.
We play pretty big jokes on each other. And it would have been, and then I thought for sure it was a joke. And then they went to take my blood at the hospital. And I was like, oh, good. I need blood work. Matt's just getting me blood work for me. Like, I honestly had no, I mean, I was definitely totally out of it, but I really thought it was a joke at the same time.
Wow. That's incredible. How, when you came back and you were released from your experience, what was that like just coming back into like your normal life after having such a huge, you know, how long did you say you were in there? 6 weeks?
6 weeks total. Yeah. It was so hard to come back. So all I wanted to do was come back. I missed my, you know, my husband and my kids so much and my family and friends, everyone so much. And I couldn't wait to come back. And all they kept saying in the mental hospital is the hardest time of your life is going to be when you come back from this mental hospital. And I didn't believe it. And they're like, the hardest part is still coming. The hardest part is still coming. And they were 100% right. I mean, I also fell into a deep depression. Some friends decided they didn't want to be friends with me because I was bipolar. So I had to make a whole new group of friends, which fortunately I did. But that was very painful to go through. So it was a lot. And after mania, a lot of times you fall into a depression, and I did. And it was just you work on yourself for 28 days. And then all of a sudden I was back. It was during COVID time. My kids were being homeschooled, and it was just not homeschooled, but you know, virtual. And it was just a mess. And it was very, very, it's very, very hard to come back from a mental hospital.
Wow. Yeah. And during COVID, no less.
Yeah. It was COVID was opening up. So it was 2021. So it was a little bit opening up, but it was still a lot of protocols were there while I was because of COVID. So Matt couldn't visit me in the mental hospital because of COVID. A lot of things were affected by COVID.
Right. Right. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Okay.
Yeah. And what kind of journey will people have when reading your book?
Okay. So my book is Finding Flossom, and the subtitle is Life Lessons I Learned in a Mental Hospital. So the subtitle kind of tells a little bit what it's about, but it's basically all about my story. So I didn't know my diagnosis until 2 weeks into the mental hospital. So I didn't know what I was doing in even the nice mental hospital for 2 weeks. So it talks a lot about my story and why am I here and what am I doing here. And then it tells about some backstories, how I got there and showed stress in my life, and then how I applied the life lessons that I learned there during this my stay and subsequent to when I came home, how the life lessons helped me. So it's kind of like a few stories at once going through it, like before the mental hospital, during the mental hospital, and after the mental hospital. I get into other mental health patients' stories as well as much as I can with HIPAA. It's kind of altercated, obviously, because I'm a lawyer and I know better. And I go through, it's just basically all the lessons I've learned. And it's supposed to be so that people could learn the same lessons without having to be away from their family for 5 weeks. And it has nothing to do with any diagnosis. You don't have to be bipolar to read this. I'm sure a lot of people who have mental health problems will read this, which I hope so, you know, because it talks about my anxiety and depression and everything like that. And of course, bipolar and ADHD and everything else. But it's definitely just a book, a lighthearted, funny book, which you wouldn't expect, that talks about being in a mental hospital.
I admire you so much for being so transparent
about all that. I think there's still such huge stigma. I mean, it's much better than it was in the past, but still, you know, for people who are suffering from mental health issues, it's like you said, like people cut you out of their life, you know?
Yep, they do. And people, I'm loud and proud on Facebook about being bipolar, and people say things to me. And there was someone in my town who said, if someone was bipolar, I wouldn't want them near my kids. And I read that, and you read these things, right? But you have to realize that that's why then it just gives me more motivation to break the stigma. The stigma is still there for sure. I think in mental health, the stigma has gone away a lot for many things. I feel as though anxiety and depression are almost trendy, and there's definitely, I don't think there's too much of a stigma around them, which is fabulous. Obviously, I don't want people to have anxiety or depression, but I'm glad that so many people feel comfortable. It's not fat. Yay, everyone has anxiety and depression.
Like hiding it, right? I mean, I'm sure some people are, but not as much.
It's interesting because since coming home from the mental hospital, I've been very open on Facebook about my journey, and I have 5,000 followers on there. So I get a lot of people talking to me. And it's very interesting, the stigma, because a lot of people around my age talk to me how their parents thought it was such a stigma, right? So I'm in my 40s. A lot of people in their 40s say that their parents think it was a stigma. They're trying to break the stigma. So I think it's just generational. I think it is getting a little bit more broken, especially, as I said, for anxiety and depression. I think bipolar is such a tough disease. A lot of people can't work with it. A lot of people can't hold relationships with it. I feel so lucky that I've been with my husband for 22 years, but a lot of people cannot hold relationships or jobs. So it does get a very bad rep, especially a lot of people don't take their meds, and there's mania. And yeah. I would love to show the world that you could live such a great life, even though you're bipolar, it doesn't mean anything. And there's plenty of people out there who have something, right? Everyone has something. So I couldn't get over this, but I kept thinking, I can't believe I'm bipolar. I can't believe I'm bipolar. I could not get this diagnosis out of my head for years. But then all of a sudden I realized everyone has something that's hard, right? We all have something. Yes, mine's bipolar. Some of my friends are in debt. Is that any harder than being bipolar? I don't know. One of my friends her husband cheated on her. Is that any harder than being bipolar? Probably not, right? Like, all of these situations, right? Like, yes, I am not. If I had my choice and someone said, would you want to be bipolar or not? I would clearly choose not to be bipolar because it is a hard disease to manage. But that being said, it is just a part of me. And that's what I want everyone to see. And I hope everyone feels comfortable talking about their mental health challenges. And that's why I am happy to write the book and hopefully help break the stigma a little.
That's so fantastic. So where can people find you and find this book?
Okay, it's being published as we speak. So it'll be on Amazon eventually. But for now, on Facebook, my page is Laura Greenberg Schiller. And my Instagram, for my new Instagram, which I just started, is Finding Flossom. So I'm super excited. It's about the book. So I could say it now. We just got a title. So we're excited. Now we're working on the cover, which whoever wrote a book, I'm sure you can relate. It's not the easiest to figure out a cover either, but we're working on it. So yeah, so Finding Flossom on Instagram and Laura Greenberg Schiller on Facebook. I post a lot on there as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a touching story. And again, like, it sounds like something that you would hear from like a close friend. And it's amazing that you're just opening this up to like the whole world.
Yeah. I hope everyone reads it and enjoys it and feels a little bit less petrified to open up about mental health.
Great. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.